Hello and welcome to the 8th edition of the KSC podcast. This is Christian Waywell. In this podcast, we're going to be talking about chime clocks. Yes, folks. A good old-fashioned, venerable chime clock. I have two of these. At the moment, I can only talk about one because it's kind of the other one's broken. But as soon as I get the other one back, I'll address the need of that, maybe in a podcast in its own. But I'm going to give you a general idea of what chime clocks are about. Let's talk about the actual... in this podcast, we're going to discuss a particular one. As I say, I've got two of these things. One of them is actually in for repair at the moment. The other one has been repaired and it is working as it should. It's always good fun to kind of do podcasts on stuff like that that people enjoy. So, I'm going to give you, to start with, before we get stuck into the podcast, I'm going to give you my email address, contact details, and various other criteria. I'm not on the Blind Cool Tech mailing list. I haven't bothered putting myself back on there just yet. I will eventually, I will go back on there, but at the moment, I don't see the need. It's a good list. Just at the minute, I'm busy helping out with some stuff somewhere, and I haven't really got the time to do the list. So I'm kind of keeping quiet at the moment and concentrating on stuff I want to do. So I can't be contacted via the Blind Cool Tech mailing list at this time. However, I can be contacted by email at kwaywell, which is kwhawell, at kwhawell.plus.com. Okay, so let's start with a little description of the clock itself. And then we'll go down and actually kind of talk about the procedures we use for setting it up, how you actually wind the clock, and various things like that. So it is quite an interesting topic for those of us interested in that kind of thing, obviously. The clock we're going to talk about is a 1930s mantle clock. It consists of a single chime. It's a single chime mechanism. By that I mean there's one hammer. Clocks have come a long way since their inception, really. And these things are kind of an early... I wouldn't say an early development, but they're not recent. They've been going... The pendulum clock is actually kind of a recent development. Within, the last 100 years or so, maybe. Or should I say accurate ones, anyway. Nowadays, they're kind of not used for anything seriously accurate. At the point when they were developed, they were used for accurate jobs, such as keeping track of time in scientific laboratories and that kind of thing. The pendulum clock, at the time of its invention, was actually considered to be the most accurate timekeeping device. Now they're just considered as household products, if you like. These ones I have are just that. The first one we're going to talk about, as I say, is a 1930s style clock. Most likely has a German movement. The movement we'll describe in a moment exactly what that is. It's most likely German, anyway. It's basically the movement is the collection of cogs and gears that make up the motor, or the set of things that drive the clock, so to speak. Now, a clock is made up of a number of parts. You have the pendulum, which serves as the time base. Now, believe it or not, it isn't the weight of the bob or the weight at the end of the pendulum that slows it down. It is a length of rod to which the bob or weight is attached. Now, lengthening the rod slows it swing down, higher the rod length. Shortening the rod length speeds it up. So that's essentially how you set the clock to be accurate. You alter its speed. I've pretty much got mine constant now. When I first got that one repaired, it was up and down all over the place. But now it's pretty constant, and it's serving well. It's doing a nice job. So what do you actually have then? How does the pendulum keep going? Well, it's actually, the whole thing is powered by springs. Some clocks are powered by weights, other clocks are powered by springs. And these two are powered by springs. There's a spring that controls the chime section. And there's a spring which controls the weight, the action of the weight or pendulum, as we'll refer to it from now on, the pendulum. Now, that side of it is called the escapement. An escapement is basically a control device for counting the passage of time. It regulates the speed at which the mechanism can move. If it didn't have one, the mechanism would just go and it would run the spring down in a matter of seconds. It would just totally disengage everything and the whole lot would just go zoom, and it would just, the hands would go round the clock in a matter of seconds. They'd probably cover the 12-hour period, however many times the spring's designed to run for. So that wouldn't be any good. That wouldn't allow the clock to function in the desired operation. So what exactly happens? Well, as when we go down in a minute to actually talk about it, I will actually demonstrate what happens. And also I'm going to demonstrate how we go about winding a clock. What are the parts involved on the actual clock itself, as we discuss the pendulum. We're going to actually discuss it from a mechanical point of view, as well as what's actually there. So there will be some technical talk, but I will back that up with information of a less technical nature for those that kind of don't understand the technical side. We will be referring to things such as cams and gears and rods, springs and weights, pendulums, coils and that kind of thing. So bear with me. All will be revealed. Now, I'm recording this for your information. This has been recorded on the Edirol R1, my beloved Edirol. And we're going to get some stereo recordings of the clock in question. I will, if I feel like it, and I do actually get my other one back in time, I will actually add the other one to this podcast. If I don't, I will make a podcast about the other clock. I will describe it on this file when I've talked about the first one, to say that it is slightly different. It is more complicated, and it does have a different sound. The chime is different. Okay, let's talk about the escapement. What is an escapement? Well, the escapement is the part of the clock which, as I said previous, controls the passage of time. It regulates the speed at which the clock hands turn. If it wasn't there, it would just go shoom, 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 and it would just completely just unwind the spring in a matter of seconds, and the hands would probably do 12,000 miles per hour. Wouldn't really achieve a lot. So, what actually the escapement is? is a gate, if you will, which allows one tooth of the pendulum through of the cog. There's a cog, a timing cog. And as the pendulum swings, the pendulum controls the speed of the escapement, how often it lets a tooth of the gear through. In order for it to function, it needs to be timed so that the pendulum is moving evenly. We'll get to that in a minute, how that actually works. So what you have effectively is a cog and a gate. Now the gate stops the cog from going through. As the pendulum moves, it releases a latch and it allows one tooth of the cog to go through it, which gives you a click. Now, as the pendulum is swinging left to right and back again, each time a tooth clicks through the cog, that imparts a force into the pendulum, which clicks it, effectively is kicking it the opposite way to which way it's just gone, keeping it going. Now, pendulum on its own won't swing indefinitely. It's got to be helped along by the escapement. The escapement is what keeps the pendulum going, which keeps the escapement going, effectively. The two work together very closely. They're very closely tied. Now, it's the escapement that you hear when you're listening to a clock and it's going. Yeah, the sort of go. Depending on the clock, some go. Kind of that kind of speed, which is the one downstairs. Obviously, it depends on the height and length of the clock. A grandfather clock would be. That kind of speed. But again, it depends on the height of it and the length of the pendulum rod. Depends on the speed of the swing. But they're calibrated to still, even though they're swinging slower. They do provide the same time constant. They just put a bigger force on the hands as it clicks round. It makes the hands move slightly more, so it keeps in time with a smaller clock, which is ticking faster. They don't move the hands as far when they tick, so they each tick doesn't move as far as on a big clock, if you know what I mean. So. The resolution of the ticks is higher on a smaller clock because the pendulum rod is shorter. So every time the pendulum swings, it opens the gate like a one-way valve, so the pendulum, the tooth of the gear can slide in. As it slides in, the spring is acting on it and it wants to keep moving. So as it clicks in place, pushes against the mechanism that's moving the pendulum, the gate mechanism, forcing the pendulum back the other way. As it does so, the pendulum starts to swing back the other way, and another tooth clicks through, and the process repeats. So the pendulum comes back, forth, back, forth. And that's basically how the escapement works. There are different types, depending on the type of clock. Some are controlled like by a pendulum, which in the case of these two it is. Others are controlled by what they call a balance wheel. The pendulum type are not self-starting. You have to nudge the pendulum to life. You have to get it swinging for it to keep itself under momentum. And the balance wheel type are self-starting. It just goes by itself. As soon as you wind the clock up, the balance wheel starts to rock backwards and forwards, which gives you the tick, 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 tick of the old type watches and clocks, the old type bedside alarm clocks from the 60s and 70s before the electric type. And sort of a kind of tick-tock sound that you hear. That is the escapement again. On those, that's how they work. Now, when we go downstairs in a moment where the clock is. We're going to talk about this. I'm actually going to let you hear the sound of the clock in action. Then we'll talk about the chime. How that works. What actually happens, pretty much. And then we'll talk about winding. I've actually wound it up. I've actually got a recording of me winding it up. So I'll include that as to in the podcast about winding clocks, because I wound it yesterday. So I do have a recording of me winding the clock. So that pretty much covers it. So let's go now and examine the clock. As I say, it's a 1930s style clock. This particular one. It is basically flat-sided. The sides are flat. The top corners are convex. Is it concave? Well, they go in. They dip in. Similar to the shape of the side of a guitar body. Then they come out and it's kind of a curved top. A dome-like top. It is, oak or something. It's made out of a nice dark coloured wood, anyway. Which, to be honest, is very, very nice. It really does look nice. It is, as I say, it is an old clock. It was my gran's. She died in February. Some people will know this already. And she left me the clock. It's never worked. All the years I've known her, all the years she's been alive that I've kind of been around, it's never worked. It's always been in a state of disrepair. And it's a shame because it's a lovely, lovely clock. I've had it repaired and restored and it's working beautifully and my gran would be seriously proud of it. So let's go downstairs and we'll actually let you hear the sound of the clock as it ticks to give you an idea from various angles. Doodle doodle doodle. There we go.
Okay.
Here we go. This is from the front. It's from the back. If I open the back, I get the sound from inside. Okay, so that's pretty much it. Drop these on here, don't need them. So in order for it to work, as I say, it uses an escapement. And the escapement is what's making the noise, pretty much. So now we're going to talk about the chime and how the chime affects the actual sound, what the chime is. So let's run a chime on this thing so you can hear what it sounds like. I'm going to do it from the inside so you can hear it. It goes like this. muted that to stop it ringing for ages. If I actually bing the chime manually, you'll hear just how long it goes for. Now what you might have noticed, while I was doing that, there's a lot of mechanical noise. A lot of this kind of noise goes something like this. It goes... You hear the click, click noise. Now that is pretty much the sound of the mechanism that does the chime. Now what that actually is, when I get back upstairs, I'll talk about that more as we get round to it. It's kind of interesting actually how it does what it does. Right, that's that done. So I'm just realigning the time shift. Right. So, how does it work? Well, the chime mechanism, like the actual escapement, is controlled by a spring. Now, I don't actually know the ins and outs of this, but I'll try and explain the bits of it that I know. Now, you may have noticed a lot of mechanical noise there, this click kind of noise. The motor whirring noise is the actual mechanism driving the cams, which I'll talk about in a minute, which drive the hammer. Now, the chime consists of a hammer, which is like a little metal shaft, and on the end is a little hammer kind of arrangement, which bounces onto a coil, which makes the bong, bong kind of noise. There's a big coil spring. This is driven by the mechanism which makes all the noise, all the whirring noises that you heard. What happens is when the clock is asked to strike the hour, there is a wheel. In the case of that, we did the absolute maximum that it goes, 12. I repeated it, obviously, to get you the idea of how the mechanism sounded on its own, so you could hear the clicks and the whirring as without the boing, so to speak. So as the... Say it will take 12 o'clock. There's a wheel which... goes round. It's not a complete wheel, I don't think. I call it a counter wheel, and this moves into a certain position. When you're actually waiting for a clock to strike, like 10 minutes before it's ready to actually go, you hear this sort of a noise. It sort of goes, kind of thing. It's sort of something like that. Go ding, ding, ding. Now that is the wheel dropping into position, ready for the chime to take up its position when the clock gets to 12 o'clock or whatever time. It moves the set number of distances. Now what happens is every time the chime cycles, this clock, this wheel gets advanced one click. What that allows for to happen is it allows the clock to run. It allows the chime to know how many times it's struck. Obviously, if the chime's got a strike six, the clock has a position of six notches on the wheel, and it sets this position based on the hands on the clock. I don't know how that part works, but I know how the counter wheel works, pretty much. So, if you are say counting six, when it gets to maybe 10 minutes to six, the wheel is allowed to drop into the position where six teeth are showing, so that each time the clock cycles round, it moves one of these out of the way, so it knows when it gets to the last position to stop the mechanism at the right point. What actually is causing the chime then? Now we've discussed the counter wheel. What is actually making the chime? Well, as I said before, there's a hammer and a coil. And the hammer bounces off this coil. It is lifted up by what's known as a cam. As the mechanism turns, there's an offset wheel, or like a half wheel, what they call a cam, which gets under the hammer mechanism and lifts it. At a certain point, the cam is like stepped, so it just drops away. There's nothing there, it's like half a wheel. As the chime turns, this hammer lets go, this cam, or half wheel, lets go of the hammer, which allows it to fall and hit the coil. The chime cycles round and gets under the hammer again and lifts it up to this point and allows it to fall again. The process repeats as many times as needed for the actual thing to work. So, if you're near a clock, and it's a chime clock, and it's getting to the time that it needs to be at, and it kind of makes this weird noise, and I'll see if I can make it do it. Let's have a look, see if I can persuade it to work. I might not be able to persuade it to do it. We'll have a go. Move that back a bit while I get in. You hear kind of this noise. It's not going to do it. Wait a minute. I'll make it do it. Right. If you're near a clock that makes this noise, it sort of goes bump. What you'll get is kind of this sound about 5 minutes to the hour. 10 minutes to the hour, it'll make this noise. Like that. That says it's preparing. It's preparing to do the time. I'm not quite sure why it does that, but it does. When it gets a bit closer to the hour,
5 minutes to, it makes this noise.
Now that is the count wheel dropping into position. Ready for the event of striking. Now, gonna let you hear the clock from the perspective of how it will sound with the back door closed. Just to give you an idea of how it sounds so different. It is a very different sound, I have to say. One which I like. So that's pretty much it. Now I'm going to get onto the subject of winding the clock and how that is done. Basically, there are two holes in the front. You open the front door and there are two holes. There is a key which fits into the holes, and you put the key into the hole, you make that noise with it. Tighten it up to the necessary position, same with the other key. I've actually done this the other day. We turn it so it's nice and tight so it can't go any further. That's now wound, pretty much. A thorough explanation of that will be later to give you a better idea, but that's basically it. It's a very interesting subject, I have to say, for those of us that do like this kind of thing. I do like chime clocks a lot, actually. It does give me a lot of pleasure to be able to kind of give you a tour, if you like, of the clocks in question, or the clock as it stands. I do have another one. As I said, I do have another one. And the other one is actually a more complicated clock. It consists of the same idea as that, with the pendulum and the escapement mechanism. But instead of having just a single chime, it has a number of rods, what they call gong rods. Now, the gong rods allow the clock to play a tune on the hour, which gives a very nice sound. The clock plays the Westminster chime. For those of you that aren't familiar with that, if you've ever heard of the Big Ben bell, the big clock that is part of, is actually what does the tune. I don't know the tune exactly. Otherwise, I'd kind of play part of it on the Tyros to show you what actually how it goes. I don't know it offhand. But it basically starts off with, on the quarter hour, it just does a little bit of a chime. On the half hour, it does a bit more. On the quarter two, it does some more. And on the hour, it does some more still. I'm thinking that I might do a little show on that, to describe that clock, as part of this podcast. This is going to come in, you know, as the 8th edition. It will take a lot of preparation, but we can, you know, we can do this. I like to prepare podcasts in this way, I do hope to get edition 8 up before Christmas. But if I don't, edition 9 will be Christmas related. So hopefully that'll be good. So now we're going to talk to you about actual clock winding. We actually give an example of me winding the clock. When this bit was recorded, it was fairly early in the morning, so I don't sound like my normal self. I hope you've enjoyed this part so far. As I say, if we get this out before Christmas, then all well and good. If we don't, I will try and include a description of the other clock. I want to get the other clock described in this file as well. I'm going to actually phone the guy who's got that later to see how he's getting on with the repair of the gong rod that's broken. So that could be interesting. So hopefully we should get that back soon. I'll be able to talk to you about that. As I say, there's on that clock there are four rods which make up the tune. They're actually tuned in an odd way. The clock is a rather strange design, the way that it's tuned up. It plays in the key of G, roughly, and it's a very, very pleasant chime sound. It does sound very nice. It's a very pleasant tone. So, I will, as I say, I will get that as soon as I get that repaired. I will be adding that to this file, but for now, this podcast is going to primarily consist of at this point in time, it will consist of just this for now. But I'm going to actually not put this up until I get the whole thing. So now let's move on to the actual winding of the clock. That is a procedure which does need a bit of care. I mean, I've actually done it and I didn't need to do it, but I've demonstrated the actual sound of the wind. Basically, you have to wind the spring until it is tight, and we're going to do that now. So now, as promised, what we're going to do is I'm going to go downstairs and we're going to wind up the clock in the hall, and you'll hear what actually happens. So I'm going to get the key and open the front, and the front opens pretty much like a Braille watch. You pop it open, and there's two holes inside. You put the key in, and you just turn it to the right, and as you do so, you'll hear it ratcheting. Okay, let's do that now. Okay, let's open the front. Put the edge down there. Here's the key. Pop open the front. The key in. And we turn. Key. And that's it. Close the front, and it should be alright now. So, we're now back for the second part of this podcast. We now have the other clock returned from repair as of the 18th of December. Now, this clock is somewhat unusual. It's somewhat bigger than the other clock. It is still a mantle clock, but it's somewhat larger than the previous one. It consists of, as I mentioned earlier on in this file, it consists of four rods that give the tune. Each rod is a different pitch, and it uses a combination of four rods to generate the Westminster chime, which I have recordings of as of today. So we'll be putting them in the file along with a description of that chime and what it signifies. Now, the clock itself is kind of hat-shaped. It's wider at the bottom than it is at the top. It's very large and heavy, actually, compared to the previous one. Because, as I say, there's more maintenance. There's more circuitry. Not circuitry. Clockwork involved in the actual workings. So the clock does do a lot more internally. It relies upon the escapement mechanism as found on the previous one. It still has a pendulum. And is somewhat, as I say, larger and heavier. This particular clock lives in the front room. It has three winding holes as opposed to two because there's an extra part to the chime mechanism that the previous one doesn't have. It actually has three what they call drive trains. You have the drive train which deals with the escapement, one that deals with the tune part of the chime, and the other one actually deals with the chime itself. The actual hour section. That one only gets activated once an hour. The other side of it gets activated every 15 minutes. What it consists of, how the chime works, is there's four hammers and there's two actuating mechanisms that control them. One consists of a wheel with four discs and notches on each disc, like little lugs. As the disc turns, the appropriate hammer gets lifted by the lug on the disc and dropped in the appropriate order to generate the tune. When it gets to the hour, there's a rod which comes under all three hammers, out of three of the four hammers, and lifts them all at once and drops them onto the appropriate notes. One of the hammers doesn't get used in the final section because it's not melodically useful. It wouldn't fit with the tone. So they use one hammer. They use three out of the four in the actual final strike for the actual hour, which you'll hear that on this next part when I introduce those files. The tone of the clock is very, very nice. Some people may say, well, yeah, okay. But it does have a very warm 1930s style tone, I think. It's very, very homely, actually. The other one's not so pleasant, I don't think. It's nice, but it's not as pleasant because it doesn't play a tune. This one does have a tune, and it does sound very nice and pleasant and warm, if you like. It's a nice tune. Unlike most clocks of today that are mass-produced, the tone is slightly imperfect. Because of the nature of when it was made and the rods that it was made from, it gives a slightly imperfect kind of tone. But this is all right because, you know, it adds to its age value, if you like. And it adds to its appeal because, you know, it's old and it's somewhat very much loved, in fact. This is one I bought for £4 at a local charity shop, and I have to say it cost me a fair bit to get it repaired, but the result was that I got a very, very nice clock out of it. It's not, as I say, it's not the prettiest looking thing. because, I mean, it's old, and the wood that it's made of seriously needs a polish and a clean to get it to look its best. But I bought it because, well, it was only £4 at the charity shop, and it was a bit broken when I got it, and I got to learn how they worked. But I've had it restored, as I have with my gran's clock, and it really looks and sounds great. On the mantelpiece where it is. I mean, we've polished it a little bit, so it does look better than it did when I first got it. It didn't look great at all. It was pretty dirty, actually, and not very nice to look at, but it has been restored to its, wouldn't say its former glory, but it's better than it was, and I am working on, you know, trying to get it clean and polished and nice and everything as time goes on. So let's go now and let's just have a listen to how it sounds compared to the other one. You know from the previous podcast how the other one sounded in terms of its tick. This one's got a deeper, softer tick, I think. We'll walk past the first one and let you hear that from the front again. And then what we'll do is we'll go near the second one in the front room. Hello, puppies. Yeah, we've got three puppies here. Right, let's have a look. This is the first one. I've got to go in here now. Pooey. This is the newest one. Kind of a different sound altogether. Wow. Roaring fire, anyone? Yay. Nice homely sound. So now, having described that clock and let you hear the sound of it, let's show you the tone of the chime. Now, the first chime you're going to hear is the quarter to. No, we're going to go quarter past, half past, quarter to, and the hour. And when I got to the hour chime, it was 12 o'clock, so you're going to get the full cycle. Not just one or two, I wanted to hear the full cycle. We got 12 o'clock on the last one, so 12 o'clock is a pretty magic time, I think. It shows a clock's full potential, because it's the maximum running time of the mechanism. And you can hear how the thing works, and you'll hear some mechanical noise on this one, but it's not as good. It's not as loud, I don't think, as a mechanical noise on the other one. It's probably a better mechanism on it. I really couldn't tell you. But it certainly sounds nice. So what we're going to do is now I'm going to transfer this file into SoundForge. And we're going to start adding the bits together. So the first thing you're going to get now is the quarter past chime, followed by the half past chime, followed by the quarter to, followed by the final hour. Again, all this has been recorded on the Eddie Roll. The final part will be closed out with SoundForge. But generally I've been recording the whole of this podcast on the R1 itself. For those of you who've listened to my review, you'll know that the R1 is my favourite means of recording. Mainly because it's versatile. It's not the smallest machine on the market by any means. We'll leave that to the Eduroll R9. We'll leave that job to the R9. But the R1 is certainly a nice machine for what it does. It does it well, I have to say. So now, we introduce you to the chimes on the hat-shaped clock. As I say, this is a 1930s, just the same as the other one. I would say it's probably a more upmarket model, shall we say. Due to it being, you know, a higher, maybe a slightly higher priced clock than the previous one. But this is basically it. As I say, both have been lovingly restored and repaired. And I've got two nice clocks. So I'll leave you with the chimes, and then I'll, when I've come back from that, we'll sign off. And hopefully you will enjoy this file. This is the point at which I say enjoy. I will be inserting a little comment between each one, which telling you which chime it belongs to, so that you know. Basically, it gets longer and the tune gets more complex as the time goes on, so you'll see how it evolves from the quarter hour, quarter past to half past to quarter to the hour. You'll see how the tune evolves in that order. We've done them in the right order to make it easier. There is a bit of banging noise in the background. I do apologise for that on this recording. My dad was working on something, so please apologise for the banging. I was hoping to get a perfect recording of the chime, but life isn't always perfect, so please bear with me. Okay, that draws this side of the podcast to a close. I will be closing the thing off entirely in a few minutes' time. Hope you've enjoyed this. Here are the chimes starting from quarter past. This is now the half past the hour chime. Here we have the quarter to the hour chime. And last but not least, the hour chime itself, complete with the 12 strikes for the 12 midday. Well, that just about wraps it up for the 8th edition of the KSC podcast. I hope that everybody's enjoyed this podcast, and there will be more to come. Hopefully, edition 9 will be Christmas related, which is always fun, I have to say. It's a nice time of year, this time of year.
So hopefully it'll be some nice Christmas magic for you all to listen to and enjoy. This is Christian signing off.